And good morning, everyone, from the shining, moon-drenched landscape of the Land of Enchantment on the other side of midnight on this May 26th. Decades ago, John Kennedy, yesterday, announced we were going to the moon, and we're looking at moonlight, and it's never been the same. You know, this program is making extraordinary inroads. We've been up now on the new network, AM First Radio, and two affiliates at opposite ends of the continent, KCAA there in San Bernardino, and at the other end of the sea from Tusining Sea, over there in Maine. And when you look at that little widget we've got up on our main page, and I'm really falling in love with the widget because we're now in 84 countries. 84 countries. Just click on the widget and you can go through the statistics and you can dig deeper, click on various windows and it gives you ways to analyze. And I mean, the other night we were doing a show and it was I happened to glance at it and it said 15 countries, 195 cities. 19.5. Now, that's just unvarnished data. It's just data streaming in and it's only the minimum. So we're reaching a lot of folks. So let me tell you a couple of housekeeping things before we get into our interesting subjects this morning. The archive, Club 19.5, is up and running. We've been under warp since about 12 hours ago. And as far as I can tell, it's steady as she goes. So people are subscribing. People are downloading. People are listening. People are doing what the club needs them to do, which is to become asynchronous, no longer tied to our Land of Enchantment, New Mexico time zone. A couple of things now. If you look under my items under Radio with Pictures tonight, the other side of midnight.com, click on Radio with Pictures. That takes you to the night's guest page. You'll see several links up there. I didn't have a chance to get into this last night, but I do want to talk about it briefly. Finally, after decades, Pennsylvania judges ordered Bill Cosby to stand trial on sexual assault charges. And this could be a landmark case. I remember Bill Cosby, as you all do, we all do, all over the world, you know, loving father, etc. I mean, it just shows you how complicated and complex and at some level, almost inscrutable life can be. Other two items there relate to the Trump campaign. As I told you last night, Robin was downtown and almost got caught in that melee. It wasn't really a riot, but it certainly was more than just a protest. There were bottles thrown and rocks and fires lit, and some of those hats got unfortunately lit on fire. Much larger demonstrations of the same vein took place in Anaheim this afternoon in California. And, of course, these stories are linked up under my section tonight. What I'm going to be doing for the rest of the evening as we bring on my guest, Dave Disler, we're going to talk about places to go. And if you keep clicking on the other side of midnight.com and then click on Radio with Pictures, there's going to be another image that we're going to be posting in the next couple of minutes that's going to kind of frame the background to our conversation with Dave, because it's looking now, as you're going to hear in the next couple hours, it's looking now like there may be a radical technological alternative to rockets, which means it gives human beings, the human race, humankind, the solar system, and makes obsolete every space program on the surface of the planet tonight politically. It will no longer be necessary to have places like Vandenberg and Cape Canaveral and the outback at Woomera in Australia or the launch facilities in Kazakhstan for the Russians. And we'll get into the details of how this revolution is going to take place in a couple of minutes. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
Like to spend a few days in another world? Then write this down. Golden Bear Cottages, Big Bear Lake. Now, listen, this is not some corporate-owned operation. It's family-owned and operated by some real nice people. Unique? Oh, you bet. Golden Bear Cottages features 28 one-of-a-kind cabins on a 5-acre historic site. Great for families, couples, and groups. And cabins are available with 1 to 7 bedrooms. Golden Bear Cottages is just a stone's throw from Big Bear Lake and super close to 3 great ski areas. Now, I could go on all day about Golden Bear Cottages in Big Bear, but to see everything, just go to goldenbear.net. Again, goldenbear.net. Golden Bear Cottages in Big Bear. Clean, comfortable, and affordable. Check them out. goldenbear.net.
Oh, no. Out of toner. Off to the store to buy another expensive cartridge.
Hello, Dave. It's your printer.
What? Hey, I just want to go out and buy some toner.
Dave, I can't let you do that.
Wait a minute. You're my printer. Printers can't talk.
Why are you buying expensive toner, Dave?
I buy it at the office supply store.
Dave, your company expects you to save them money.
How can I do that?
By going to the source, Dave. When you need toner, you have to go to the source, discountofficesource.com.
Discountofficesource.com. Here it is. You're right. Unbeatable prices. Fast and free delivery.
Now, Dave, order all your ink and toner supplies from discountofficesource.com and start saving money.
Unbeatable prices with fast and free delivery.
For all your ink and toner supplies, make sure you go to the source, discountofficesource.com, and start saving money.
Do you have to ride the bus or depend on someone else for a ride? Is your current car giving you problems or just getting too old? Nearly everybody needs a car, but most people don't have enough money lying around. That's where car financing from Credit Yes comes in. For over a decade, Credit Yes has helped millions of people get the auto loan that's right for them. We want to help you too. And for free. Whether you have bad credit, no credit, or even gone through bankruptcy, we could help you get a car loan. We believe that everyone deserves a second chance. If you call right now, we could find you the right financing option, no matter your credit history. 855-669-7131. Every call is absolutely free and there's no obligation, meaning there's nothing to lose. Now is the time, and it's probably not always going to be this easy. We even have programs that may allow you to put zero money down. Don't wait any longer to get the car you need, no matter your credit history. Call Credit Yes for free right now. 855-669-7131. That's 855-669-7131. One last time, 855-669-7131.
And we are back. It's a gorgeous moonlight. I mean, I keep raving about the moonlight because it's moonlight to rave about. Plus, you know, Patrick's looking for it in Georgia in the next few hours. And the temperature right now is just under 60, about 58, 59. Really nice spring temperatures here in the land of enchantment. My guest this morning is Dave Distler. Dave's been on the show before when we were at the other network. So with a whole bunch of new people, I kind of want to back up and start at the beginning. Dave was born in Germany and came to the U.S. as a naturalized citizen at the age of 2. He grew up just outside Indianapolis, Indiana, and attended Purdue University in the early 70s, studying to become an airline pilot. Dave left the university after realizing the airlines had a surplus of pilots to choose from, coming back from Vietnam, of course. And he chose instead to go into a profession that included working full-time as an electronics technician. Dave advanced in 3 companies over the next 35 years through quality control, sales and marketing, and finally product line management in military, aerospace, and all associated manufacturers. And along the way, he obtained his extra class ham license, designed and built his own repeaters and controllers, became a genealogist, wrote 3 books, and even helped produce a documentary movie in 2013. Dave, welcome back to The Other Side of Midnight.
Thank you, Richard, and belated Happy New Year since it's been...
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah, it's been a while since we talked.
And I should also add that Dave is that wonderful, booming, very, very comforting voice on one of our promos for Club 19.5. And you know, Dave, we're going to press you into service again and have you do a couple others, because that voice should not go to waste.
Sold. No one else is knocking on my door, so you've got my full attention.
Until your rates go up and you get an agent. I know. You're going to go Hollywood. I know. And yeah, I've seen it happen before. Okay, where should we begin? Let's hit on the high spots of how the heck you got into working on a radical contravention of Newton's third law.
Yeah, it was basically an old school newspaper. I picked up a local, I think it was a plane dealer here in Cleveland, and saw that, this is in 2014, read a 3 or 4 paragraph article about this convention that was in town, which is the AIAA .org people, aerospace industry.
Yeah, I think it's the American Institute for Aeronautics and Astronautics.
There you go. I always lose one of the A's in there somehow. But so they were talking about this presentation paper, and they came up with this microwave engine.
For people that don't know at all what we're talking about, what is the thing that everybody's buzzing about? And we can go to Radio with Pictures to show people images of what we're talking about, because we had the forethought to put them up there.
Yeah, we could probably do that. Have everybody jump over to Radio with Pictures, and as we're kind of going down the list here, the Roger Scheuer M drive, EM, which stands for electromagnetic drive, and there it is, kind of a steampunk looking thing, pretty cool looking, you know.
Very.
And so there's one.
Now wait a minute. It looks like a rocket engine, but when you look at picture number two, the damn thing is closed on the end. Nothing can get out. How can it be a rocket engine or an EM drive if it's not throwing something away?
Well, that's the thing. You know, Uncle Newton told us that for every action there is an equal opposite reaction. So you have to throw something out for it to move forward. You have to expend fuel. You have to have, ions or a chemical propulsion, whatever. But you have to actually get rid of something. It's a good, I guess it's picture number two on my screen here. The end is closed. So what's happening with this thing is it's not expending any fuel. It's not throwing any particulates out, no chemicals, liquids, rocks, bottles, you name it, nothing's coming out of this thing.
So again, let me get this straight. This guy, this English British engineer named Roger Scheuer, several years ago unveiled a technology that he invented, he claimed, from observing communication satellites, communication systems, right?
Right. He was involved with a company which was part of British Aerospace at one time, or soon became part of British Aerospace. He was involved in he was a project manager, and he was involved in station keeping. In other words, his responsibility for these telecom satellites that were geosynchronous, keep them in their proper spot above England or
India. In other words, when you, with a rocket like Ariane, French-British consortium, when you launch a communication satellite up to 22,300 miles, the so-called Clark orbit or geosynchronous orbit, because at that altitude, it goes around the Earth about 6,000 miles an hour, and at that altitude, the Earth rotates under it at about 6,000 optical miles an hour. So there's a match, so it appears to hang in one place over the Earth, for those folks that aren't into celestial mechanics. What Scheuer said he discovered was, remember, when you put this spacecraft up there, it's not going to stay in that nice orbit. Because the Earth is lumpy, because it's rotating under you, even if slightly, the lumpiness manifests itself in little gravitational tugs and tweaks on the orbit. So it's going to move out of optimum location. Let's say you park it so that it's looking at North America. So you need thrusters on these spacecraft to keep them, to station keep them at the appropriate longitude at their appropriate place around the geosynchronous orbit, like pearls on a huge necklace 22,300 miles high. And what Scheuer then did was report there was another mechanism, maybe, for station-keeping satellites that involved no fuel, no thrust, no rockets, no Newton, no nothing, And that's what's blown the engineering community in aerospace kind of upside down.
That's right. And actually what he had found from what I've been able to gather is what he found is that when he was doing the station keeping up there, because there were predictable changes, you know, with the orbit, like you say, but there was something else that was happening. In other words, it was moving more than it was predicted to.
Oh, so, there was an unmodeled force.
Yes. And what he had done was kind of looked at the the schematic and the block diagrams and tried to figure out what the heck this could be. You know, are they moving through a gas cloud in space? Is there some sort of radiation from the sun, electromagnetic radiation from the sun hitting it? As it goes behind the Earth, all sorts of things. But as it turns out, the only thing that they could track it down to was the satellite itself. So they thought, well, what on the satellite is capable of actually adjusting its orbit on its own? Well, they started looking at, some of the heat that comes off due to the wires and the componentry and everything, and that wasn't quite enough. The only other thing that the satellites had done was receive and transmit. So they didn't figure receiving would do anything, but they looked at the transmit side of it, and lo and behold, Roger Scheuer started formulating an idea that the actual transmission of the signals back down to the Earth were what was creating this thing.
Wait a minute. The beaming of the electromagnetic radiation from the antennas that were sending the signals, the television and the computer data and all the other information that streams through satellites, so the actual mechanism of transmitting it electromagnetically was generating some kind of force on the spacecraft?
That's correct. Yeah, that's correct. That's the only thing that he could really...
But if you do the calculation of what's called photon propulsion, you know, electromagnetic waves or electromagnetic waves, and whether they're radio waves or ultraviolet or infrared or visible, what they're supposed to, when they bounce off something or when they're emitted from something, they're supposed to basically kick back with a little tiny force, an action-reaction a la Newton. This mm-hmm. is called photon propulsion. But mm-hmm. I've seen the calculations for the photon propulsion equations applied to Scheuer's device, and they're millions of times too low.
That's right. That's right. In other words, the old scenario of putting a flashlight in space and seeing how far it'll go.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's just not going to work. So it was doing something well beyond what was anticipated with electromagnetic radiation. So photons, which are the same things, it's just lower frequencies in microwave region. It's all photonic energy. But it's a strange beast, and I'm not sure that the leading scientists in the world really understand 100% what a photon really is. If you think about its capability, the information it can carry, it gives us light, it gives us everything, gives us heat. But the thing carries momentum without mass. Now, if you just stop and think about that if you look back at Newton's, photons, when they hit something, it's not because of the mass that they carry, because they are massless particles.
Mm.
They carry energy, kinetic energy, energy of motion. So evidently what Scheuer had done, and I'm piecing this together because no one's written a bio on him that I could find, is that
he's very elusive. We've tried to get him on the show, and I think because he was burned by some other interviews and maybe what's been going on behind the scenes between him and NASA, he's just maintaining a very low profile.
Yes, the only time, in fact, we got a lot to talk about that's happened, but back in April, and I can't remember the exact date, BBC Horizons, which is kind of like a Nova on their BBC Two program, they aired a special. And I would recommend for you and the listening audience to try to pick that up. I think it's on YouTube, but it was called Project Green Glow.
Ah.
And Project Green Glow was a anti-gravity speculation done, I think, again, with British Aerospace. And I can't recall the name of the author. I got the book in there, and I've been thumbing through that when I in between my building here. But what they were working on is gravitometric, the unification of electromagnetic energy and gravity, so they can actually produce levitating vehicles and so forth. But anyway, that's a whole nother show to talk about. But what the Horizons episode did was they went and they interviewed Roger Scheuer, and he was actually on there for probably about 15 minutes.
Now, when you say Scheuer, he was in no way associated with Project Green Glow, which was a British government contract out to aerospace industry effort to see if you could create anti-gravity technology, anti-gravity vehicles, right?
That's right.
Totally separate. Scheuer, working in the communications satellite business, having nothing to do with propulsion or anything, notices, the story goes, this weird effect that's connected to when the antenna systems are powered on and off, replicating motion in the spacecraft without rockets. So he has nothing to do with Green Glow, but in this Project Horizon, not Project Horizon, but the BBC Horizon special series, they included him in the program because why?
Because it was really advanced propulsion, paradigms in scientific thinking, thinking outside the box, thinking on the edge, stepping away from Einstein and Newton. Wow. A little bit. And they included Scheuer in that, which was it was titled Project Green Glow, The Quest for Anti-Gravity. And where they got involved with Roger, I think, was that Roger had recently, within the last 2 or 3 years, talked about a superconducting version of his earlier M drive, which is, you know, on your page, their radio with pictures, picture number one.
Mm-hmm.
Totally different thing. He was showing a wedge design, which was, YBCO material, a superconducting material that can lift supposedly into the kilograms of weight. So I think the Horizons people, BBC Horizons people, were thinking that, well, this may be an answer where Green Glow didn't really take off. Maybe this Scheuer guy has got something that is kind of like anti-gravity.
Okay.
So it was sort of a hodgepodge.
Well, it didn't hurt, I would think, that in the interim between Green Glow, which came to an end when?
That was in the mid to late 90s, okay. 96, 97, I
All
believe.
Right. At the end of Green Glow, British government, aerospace corporations looking at technology to negate gravity, you had the Scheuer thing, and then you had NASA replicate the Eagle Works crowd that you are working with and have known for some years now. They replicated, in essence, the Scheuer work, and then there was the Chinese we're going to talk about. So the Horizon production team obviously says, well, wait a minute, maybe there is a technology here. So Scheuer became their boy, their homeboy, to talk to because he started the whole new obsession.
That's correct. And they also had Dr. Tajmar from University
of Germany.
Dresden. Yeah, they had him on there, and he was talking about it. And there's some news on that front since we last talked.
Okay.
On one of the on the NASA Spaceflight Forum, I believe is where I got the information, but they are giving a PhD candidate a course for basically as a project to take Tajmar's M drive, which was based on Roger Scheuer. I guess Roger Scheuer had worked with him to take it to the next level, take it to, you know, the phase two, like I'm doing, or actually get more force out of the thing, because their first, they had questionable results, but they thought they saw something, but they didn't have enough. So they wanted to take it to the next level of performance, and they're offering a PhD candidate candidacy at the University of Dresden.
Wow.
Yeah, that's news. That I think that's about 6 weeks ago I got that information. So, hey, it's,
well, this thing is moving at Warp 9 into the mainstream.
Well, it is, and there's something that I meant to send a link, and I wish I would have done it, but again, your viewers or your listeners and you yourself down the road can go to MIT Technology Review. The MIT Technology Review actually brought up the M drive. And, you know, that's a fairly mainstream.
It's a very conservative. Gene Maloff, my old friend, departed friend, used to work for them. And mm-hmm. they're very stuffy and they're very mainstream and they're very not outside the box thinking at all. So if they're tackling this seriously, that's another indication. You know, I just think we're on this long kind of downward sloping ramp to disclosure. And we're seeing a whole bunch of different things moving on the landscape that are all going to kind of come together, as we're going to talk about. We've got about a couple of minutes to the bottom of the hour, and then when we come back from the commercial break, I want to talk about your experiments and what you're doing to verify that this remarkable, totally non-Newtonian effect, where you basically create a cone, you pump microwave energy into it, and the cone wants to leave. And there's nothing coming out of it. The microwaves can't get out because it's sealed. There's no gases that can escape because there's no gases being injected. It just wants to go somewhere, and that, of course, violates everything we think we know, a la Newton.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. I'll look forward to I'll give you some input on where I was and where I am right now. So
excellent. Well, before we've got a couple of minutes here, let me ask you one more thing. We have got a link up on our website tonight, your PayPal link for your crowdfunding, your crowdsourcing, your experiments and your equipment costs and the computer time and all that kind of stuff. If people can help, if they want to help your project, they can do as we've been doing with the Nasika thruster. They can go down to the bottom of your page there on the guest page tonight, and there's a link there. Actually, we should probably move that link up to the top of the page, maybe under my links, and give it a nice title. You titled your do-it-yourself project something connected with Star Trek. What was that?
Yeah, the title of it is NSF, which is stands for NASA Space Flight. That's the forum that I first started getting most of my information on, and really good people there. I wound up becoming the moderator last of the M-Drive threads end of last November, I think. And so I'm kind of watching over it and kind of guiding them a little bit. But there are some really high-level conversations. But anyway, I titled it NSF 1701. And, of course, being the Star Trek thing. And now the second version of it's called NSF 1701A. And, so there's a little tie-in with my favorite show when I was growing up as a kid. So,
well, when we come back from the break, I'm going to talk not only about your experiments, but where they can go, the projections. Because as with any technology, you know, you start out with something, as Heinlein said, that's kind of crude and primitive and only kind of half does what you want it to do. And you quickly get better at that because you figure out how the universe is really supposed to work. And you figure out the efficiencies and you make, you know, a second version or a second generation. And then when you really get it down to working where you've got it really hacked, where you know exactly what it's supposed to be doing, you create, according to Heinlein, your third version, which is simple and smooth and easy to work with. And I mean, you're kind of now between stage two and stage three on this M drive thing, aren't you?
Well, I would say I'm already thinking of if I see the results that I had set a goal for, I've already mentally taken a look at what stage three would be. Stage three would be ready for space flight and, literally ready to launch if someone wanted to sponsor it going up on a satellite. Right now, if your listeners wanted to go to that Radio with Pictures page there, if you take a look at picture number three under the Scheuer drives, that was the original version. That was NSF 1701, which I measured about 177 micronewtons of force, very, very lightweight force, but...
Okay, hold it there, because we're at the bottom of the hour. When we come back, we're going to swing into your experiments and talk about phase two. My guest this morning is Dave Dissler, engineer, raconteur, home experimenter. Star Trek fan. And when we come back, we're going to find out how he might in fact be able to take us, if not to the stars, at least into Earth orbit. And from there, as Heinlein said, it's halfway to anywhere. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
What have I learned so far? I've learned that there is no one path right for everyone. I've learned that without my high school diploma, I can only do so much. My options were limited. I found a free personalized learning program with Learn for Life that has a flexible schedule so I could keep my job while earning my high school diploma. I found new career training opportunities that would jumpstart my future. What have I learned so far? I've learned that I can change my life.
Are you 14 to 19 years old and looking for a free high school diploma program with flexible meeting times? This program allows you to keep your job or important family responsibilities while earning your high school diploma. If you've fallen behind on credits or dropped out of school completely, get back on track with free tutoring, a caring faculty, and one-on-one attention. For more information on how to reach your graduation goal, visit learnforlife.org. That's L-E-A-R-N, the number 4, L-I-F-E.org. Or enroll today by calling 877-360-LEARN. That's 877-360-LEARN.
The Other Side of Midnight is a new expedition into matters of scientific relevance. We explore the impact galactic revelations might have on both our societies and psyches. Join host Richard C. Hoagland as he takes you on a journey through the minds of scientific experts, investigators, entertainers, and analysts. Other Side of Midnight airs live for free Monday through Friday from midnight to 2 a.m. Pacific. For only $5 a month, listen to the show anytime. Join Club 19.5 to access our full show library of on-demand archives. Go to othersideofmidnight.com and click on the Club 19.5 logo to join today. The Other Side of Midnight, contrasting our own science fiction dreams with reality in this what we call the human experience.
The following message contains a special offer for listeners of this station. Are you a man over 40? Are you constantly looking for the nearest bathroom? Do you wake up multiple times a night to use the bathroom? Right now, Perfect Prostate is sending out free bottles of their groundbreaking new formula to listeners of this station. Perfect Prostate formula was developed by medical doctor Mitchell Fleischer, and its ingredients have been clinically studied to reduce your frequent nighttime bathroom visits and promote healthy urine flow. Right now, preferred customers get their first bottle of Perfect Prostate absolutely free. There's nothing to lose. Perfect Prostate is guaranteed to reduce that constant urge to use the bathroom, especially at night, and promote healthy urine flow. Don't wait. Call now for your free bottle. Just pay shipping and processing. Dial 1-800-680-8248. That's 1-800-680-8248. Supplies are limited. One free bottle per household. Call now. Dial 1-800-680-8248. That's 1-800-680-8248.
Everyone, once again, and we are back with Dave Distler as my guest this morning. We were actually having a kind of an off-air discussion because I'm looking at this artist concept, image number 2 in Radio with Pictures, and those apparently are field lines, but as he and I were discussing, if this thing is really sealed, there's no connection between the inside, what's going on in there under normal physics, and the outside. So there should be no field connection. This thing should be sitting there rock solid. You can pump all the microwaves in it until the damn thing melts. It should not move. But as Galileo said, it moves. So what moved you, Dave, to get involved and to try to make sure this thing wasn't a hoax? In fact, it might be real.
Basically, the article that they had come up with, that all you have to do is pump in electricity, convert it into microwave energy, and it would create a force or momentum without expending fuel. And as long as you can provide electricity, to the device, then it could go forever. There is no fuel is being expended or used up. And that immediately makes me think of very high speeds, fractions of a percent of the speed of light, very, very long distances. And my imagination just went wild if it was true. I just had to find out if it was true. I mean, I didn't think it was because I've been around cavities all my life working with RF.
And I was going to say, when you say cavities, we're not talking dentistry here. We're talking radio frequency
cavities. Yeah, RF cavities. And I've never seen one move, and I've seen plenty of power being dumped into them. But
All bolted down, to be fair, right?
And no one even thought to look for it. I mean, I didn't walk in with a force meter or a scale and say, well, does this thing get lighter if I put power into it? That'd be the last thing I'd think
of. The last thing you'd ever think of.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so you're reading all this stuff and you're saying, damn it, what? I mean, the upside, it's like when Sagan and I were in this audience in Houston decades ago when the astronauts were laying out their plans for Apollo 11, and someone asked Sagan, well, how much are you going to spend on the quarantine? And he said, well, we're going to try to figure out the worth of the Earth. And the reporters all kind of did a double take. He says, then we're going to divide that by the probability that there's actually microorganisms on the moon that we can bring back and infect the whole planet and kill everybody. He said, the one number is very, very large, you know, the worth of the Earth. And the other number, the probability that we're all going to die horribly, since we were going to the moon and bringing back a horrible bacterium, that number is obviously very, 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 very low. So he said, when you multiply those two together, that's how much you spend on the quarantine. So it's kind of like your assessment is the value of this technology, Dave, is incalculable. It changes everything. We could spend the next 2 hours just discussing how life on Earth will change so much for the better for so many more people who are desperate tonight and not going to bed with enough to eat, and we're looking at wars, we're looking at oil, we're looking at resource problems, we're looking at global warming. This is a solution that tackles all of those issues that we think are so overwhelmingly destructive of humanity, and then some. So the worth of this is huge. One more thought. So apparently in your mind you said, wait a minute, it probably can't work. It doesn't work. It violates everything I think I know. But, oh, my God, what if it did? So that calculation, you did the Sagan calculation. The probability is probably low, but the value is incredibly high. So I'm going to go for it. So what'd you do?
I built on the radio with pictures picture number 3. Very, very simple. Basically, it was a 12-inch square cube. I used mesh for the sidewalls rather than a solid one, like in picture number 1 and 2, because the copper mesh cone, it was easier for me to make, didn't have to do a lot of metal working, and it contained the energy, because it doesn't escape. Just like when you look in front of your microwave, in your house, you'll see that it looks like you're looking through like a little grate of little holes and everything. Well, that's what the copper mesh does, is it just keeps the radiation in there.
So it's transparent to visible light, but it's it's reflective to microwaves.
Right, right. So the fabrication of this, although it took a little bit of sawing and cutting and everything, it was kind of a low-level mechanical build. That's double sided copper PC board there, very lightweight stuff. I don't know if it was F4 or whatever PC board, but it was relatively inexpensive to get all that stuff put together. It took me a little bit of time, and I thought, well, I'm just going to check it out for myself, see if it does anything. I built a balance beam, put a magnetron on it from a microwave, and lo and behold, took a look at my videos and remember the conversation that we had last. Well, how many times did we talk last year? I guess it was probably 2 or 3 times.
It was 2 or 3 times, yeah.
Yeah. I kind of went through what I discovered in it with just kind of an inexpensive assembly.
Well, remember, this is a whole new audience plus our oldies. So let's not assume they know anything because, again, we're talking a sealed container where you pump energy in and it wants to move, and that violates everything science thinks they know.
That's right, and it was on a balance. Basically what it was pointing downward, just like it is in that picture, picture number three. So the theory of this thing is that it moves from the large diameter, which is on the top, down toward the small diameter. The whole thing wants to move downward.
So it's a cutoff cone, both the large and the small end.
Right.
And it's you've welded or you've soldered end plates so that it's totally sealed.
Soldered in this case, yeah.
It's made of this mesh, which is of a very fine mesh, so that the microwaves literally are trapped inside. To them, it's like a mirror, even though you can see through it. Mm-hmm. You turn it on. You have it pointed down because the thrust vector is supposed to be from the big end to the small end in the cone. And then you observed what?
I observed movement down.
Wow.
So 177 micronewtons to be exact. I measured that over several different times.
What's a micronewton?
It is one less than one millionth of a newton, which is, how do I put that in grams? It translates into 18 milligrams. 18 milligrams is the weight of about three or four snowflakes.
Okay.
And it's very, very small, but it shouldn't move at all. Okay, so that's the main thing. It shouldn't be moving.
Now, did you turn it upside down so it would thrust toward the ceiling?
No, I did not, because what that would be doing is very hard to separate. When you put the power, actually in picture number three, if you look behind that box, there's a white box, and that's the actual microwave power supply. When that magnetron, which was mounted on the top, it's not shown in this picture, when you turn that thing on, it starts heating, and the magnetron actually gets up to about, close to about 370 degrees Fahrenheit.
Well, you're what? You're pumping like 1,500 watts like a hair dryer into a closed box, right?
Right, yeah, and that magnetron will lift. So what
happens, you get what's called ballooning, meaning you get thermal, like hot air balloon effects that have nothing to do with the whisper faint space drive thrust we're looking for.
That's correct. And so what I had to do was I had to be able to separate that out, any forces that I was seeing, I had to separate out from the natural lift of that balance beam. And person that I know who is a professional statistician, I sent him all of the Excel files and papers, and I said, look, I think I saw an anomalous reaction to the thermal lift. It was interrupted. In other words, a thermal lift was really
pretty. So the failure, the noise, all the time is going to be the thermal lift. So if you orient the thrust to go against the lift, that's how you separate your real thrust from the fake thrust, which is the balloon effect.
That's correct.
Cool.
So if you pointed it up, then it would actually be accelerating the lift, and you'd have to separate out the acceleration. So I just really wanted to test it. That was either a steady state holding against the lift or actually move downwards. And I saw both conditions
What you would do is you'd basically, power on, computer measure, computer measure, computer measure, power off, let it cool, power on, computer measure, computer measure, computer. Mm-hmm. And then you gave all those on off experiments to your statistician and said, is there a signal here? Is there a thrust here above the noise?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And he said, what did he say?
He said there's an anomalous signature in there that is beyond what would be random. In other words, in his terms, he put it in sort of statistician terms, that there was an anomaly there. And what I saw was real, and it wasn't invented, made up, or anything. So he basically thought that that there was something there. He says, I don't know what it is. He says, but I'm seeing that when it shows power on, you're getting some results.
Wow.
And that was enough for me to really sit back and say, well, what do I do from here? And I don't know if this was in between the times I spoke with you last year or toward the end after maybe the last time we spoke, I didn't really know where I was going to go with it from there. I didn't really have a vision of what I wanted to do. I said, you know, here's what I noticed, guys. What do you think? Well, then came all of the expected criticisms. Well, it's not that far. It's only 18 milligrams, and I've got a half a teaspoon worth of salt that says that there's nothing there, and you know, just lots of
the usual
stuff, the naysayers, and you didn't do anything, even though I had spent weeks and weeks and weeks and building.
Well, but your experiment wasn't in a vacuum. There was a bunch of other DIYers on that forum. There was a guy in Romania.
Oh, yeah.
There's a very smart gal who's named Seashells, who's going to be getting her rig together soon, I think.
Has already done some testing recently.
I'm out of date. I haven't had time to follow this, but. It's mm-hmm. not like you're the only guy in the whole forest. The naysayers not only have to pick you off, they have to pick all the other folks off who are getting positive results that shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. And unfortunately for the DIY people, they're going one after the other. There's basically a small group of the naysayers that will tend to try to make fun. You know, the old... basically the old routine. There's nothing there. It's in the noise. You know, the experiment wasn't set up properly, even though everybody's using different designs, different experiments, giving the same type of results. They're ignoring that and basically saying, well, that person's not qualified to make that. Or, you know, I wouldn't let a grad student do that. Stuff like that. Mm. So there are people, for reasons that I thought we might get into a little bit later on or maybe right now, that I think there's a vested interest in seeing that this does not get
absolutely
out.
I mean, David, welcome to the club.
Mm-hmm.
It's not only this, but a whole bunch of other discoveries. I mean, one of the things I wanted to put up tonight, and Carlos and M have gotten it together, so we actually can show you some stunning imagery from Curiosity on Mars, you know, and then come back. In other words, this private mission launched on your technology out of Earth orbit because we could get there in a few days. Technology opens up the solar system, so everything you can do to make sure it's not a fluke or it's not misidentification, but it's real, is imperative.
Mm-hmm. Well, it certainly has stirred up some controversy, mainly because the go-to people. And I say the go-to people on propulsion are, you know, the people building the you know, the rockets and the old mass ejection Goddard type of designs, even though they're much more sophisticated now. I mean, this kind of takes it out of their realm. I mean, this could possibly take it out of their realm.
Absolutely.
And so they wouldn't necessarily be the go-to people for some of these new advanced
technologies. Why would you need a Boeing or a Lockheed Martin or any of these big giants when you can do it on a tabletop and send a spacecraft to Pluto? I mean, I'm being a little facetious, but in other words, it shrinks the aerospace problem, the mountain to climb over to get to Earth orbit, as Eilein said. Mm-hmm. It shrinks it by factors of thousands. Not mm-hmm. hundreds, thousands.
Yeah, plus you really don't have the technology gatekeepers. We're the people you come to send a mission to Mars or to Jupiter, or we're the people that you contract with. One of the biggest naysayers, as I found out, was actually posted anonymously on a different forum. Was actually and is actually an employee at Jet Propulsion Lab. And when I found that out, I thought to myself, I said, you know, I said, I better look into JPL. I'd called on them many times as a person in electronics, you know, talking to their engineers and so forth about RF systems. But I didn't really know what their purpose in life was. And actually, I still probably don't know what their claim to fame is, like you might, you know, having covered them in the news business for so long. But they're sort of the go-to people for propulsion, Jet Propulsion Laboratories, mm-hmm. propulsion. Propulsion is their middle name. But then when I scan some of the stuff that they have been talking about, they're talking, you know, they were touting their green fuel, their green energy, which is fine, green rocket fuel, you know, and there's nothing wrong with that at all. But what was absent from a lot of things that I think people are really looking for nowadays is, where are you going next? What are you doing next? Okay, you've got green rocket fuel. What are you going to do? You get up to the speed of light and get us out
green
of this.
Green rocket fuel ain't going to get us to the stars.
No.
And see, that's the problem with a big institution. I mean, NASA's a dinosaur. I hate to say it, but NASA has been a dinosaur for a long time. Did you hear the news the other day that Musk is now offering private satellite developers launches into Earth orbit for, I think, 26,000?
Really? Is there a size or weight limit on that?
I don't know, but I saw it the other day, and I meant to bookmark it. But see, when you have too many devices, if you bookmark it on one, it doesn't propagate to the other unless you make a lot of, you know. So I thought, I'll wait till I get to the computer, and of course I forgot. But that's doable. The Nausicaa people, they're raising $30,000 for their Mark II.
I saw that, and you know they're up close to halfway to their goal, and they just really started that here a couple of months ago or something.
Yep, and we helped a lot. We put them on the air, and we talked with Paul from Athens actually one morning, and we've been touting their technology in the Indiegogo campaign, and they've raised about half of what they need. The thing is, we're now at this break point where if you can demonstrate, and when we come back after the top of the hour, we're going to talk about specifically the experiments that you're moving in the direction of this thing can actually really fly. That technology, when you extrapolate what you can do with it in the civilian market, I mean, you think the drones are going to be an interesting issue on Earth. This technology, we can have clubs and private entrepreneurs sending spacecraft all over the damn solar system.
Mm-hmm. And I don't see why we can't. I really don't see that that's a why is there a gatekeeper? Who is the one that who's the one that says you're launching through me and with my approval of what type of device goes up there? Right now, it's not a democracy. And I think, free enterprise, I think, ought to step into this space game really quick and get some things done.
Well, Musk is definitely doing it. He's setting standards for an old technology, but I find so interesting, and I've discussed it a couple of times on the show, there are several areas of research that we're kind of tracking that are all on the threshold of exploding, of absolutely taking the game.
Mm-hmm.
And each of these revolutionary developments in some sense makes the other obsolete. In other words, if what you're working on and what Paul is working on actually comes to fruition, we won't need rockets, you know. Remember that great line in Back to the Future, where we're going, we don't need roads?
Mm-hmm.
Well, we don't need rockets, which means mm-hmm. Musk could take this technology, and my guy, he wants to put people on Mars to get them out of the Earth basket because of potential problems of everybody being in the same place at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
This technology will make it, and with his resources, it could go from Type 2 to Type 3, not in 20 years or a generation, but maybe in 5.
Right. He definitely has the vision of doing this, and I would hope that there would be some other people that would join him into, getting into that spirit of things.
You can be sure that he is watching, or he has deputized people to watch you and the field in general, and we have some backdoor mm-hmm. contact, so we're providing information. So there's no way that he's not going to know. I mean, here's a guy did you and I talk about this? When he debuted the Tesla 3, he said to somebody on Twitter, some newspaper guy, he said, you know, it's really a private spaceship.
No, I didn't
know.
Now,
what did he mean by that?
Exactly. I'll tell you what, with his successes lately and his company's successes with the returnable booster, that's sending some really big shockwaves, throughout the system about, well, how come you guys down in Houston didn't think about this here?
Well, that's a question I asked the first night, and I think I asked it of George when he told me flatly, George Norrie over on the other network, that, he'll never make it, which is a stupid thing to say, bet against Elon Musk like betting against Trump. So he says, he'll never make it. What I want to know, and remember, I go all the way back through Cronkite to where I was able to ask Von Braun at a critical press conference at the Cape before the first all-up Saturn V test. And there's a video of me doing this question to Von Braun, the mighty Von Braun. I said to him, how come you can do all this and make it work first time out of the box when just a few years ago we were, you know, exploding atlases all over the skies down here. And he looked at me and he said, computers. And he was right, because you could do an awful lot of simulation with computers. Well, computer control of this technology, if you don't need the fuss and the fury and the explosive potential to harm other people, it takes you completely out of the category of internal combustion engines, vehicles with props, rockets. In other words, you really can have spaceflight without the incredible overregulation because there's no side effects. Mm-hmm. It would just float up and higher and higher and higher and get tiny and disappear into the sky, and you'd look at your little gizmo, you know, your little hand paddles, and it would just keep going and going, and you'd move it 5 or 8 miles an hour, 12 miles an hour, just getting higher and higher. No fuss or fury or whatever. And eventually, in an hour or two, you'd be in orbit.
That's look at it as being something like, you know, the kids in science projects releasing weather balloons with
exactly.
cameras on them.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. So. But this is real anti-gravity thrust generated in this technology by pumping microwaves into a cone, and the cone wants to move in the direction of the short end.
Mm-hmm.
Or we could say a pyramid, because a pyramid is really topologically a cone, right?
That's right.
So why are there pyramids all over the world? I think, David, it's because the ancients were heirs to a science that understood that this is how you interact with the ether. It not only can produce thrust, it can do a whole bunch of other things that your experiments aren't even touching yet, because you don't know enough yet to know what other effects you might observe.
Mm-hmm. And as Dr. White is starting to call his, which he calls a Q thruster down at the Eagle Works laboratory, the ether's new name for today's generation anyway is the quantum vacuum.
The zero point field, torsion field.
It's all coming together in sort of a nexus here of new concepts.
See, I like the torsion field. You know why I like it, Dave? Because it describes at a fundamental quantum level why this gadget works. Because torsion implies motion. It's rotation. Mm-hmm. Remember, HD physics, rotation, rotation, rotation. The ether is a dynamic medium. It's filled with vortices. And what this technology seems to do from my approaching it is because of that geometry, and there's one guy over there on the forum who was brilliant in that he figured out that it was the geometry stupid first. Remember that young guy?
Oh, yeah.
Who talked about exceeding the speed of light, and it couldn't, so it had to make a compromise in the momentum, and you wind up with thrust.
Mm-hmm.
That shape, that geometry is the keys to the solar system and beyond.
Mm-hmm. I think it definitely piqued my interest. They've tried making this with straight walls, you know, your typical standard cavity.
Who did that?
Kurt, who is, I think he just graduated from University of California, or I'm trying to think of his. It's not important. He's a university student. He was a senior this year. He built one
with straight walls, like a cylinder.
That's correct. Zellerium is his name on NASA spaceflight.
And what did he observe?
And he observed what he thought was no effect with straight walls. He attributes it to thermal effects. There was slight motion, but it wasn't toward one end or the other, at least by the last report that he had put on the forum. But for some reason, he went with Scheuer's. Scheuer wasn't using the cone design. He was using straight cavity walls because that's what they had up in the satellites. And he somehow got modified. Now, how he modified it and where that came from, that's a big mystery to me, where he decided that he was going to build a cavity with slanted walls.
And that's the secret. That's the key. Okay, yeah. I hear music. Hold it there. We're at the top of the hour. We're coming up to a station break. You're on the other side of midnight. My guest this morning, Dave Dissler. We're discussing a technology which, if we handle it right, can actually free the human race, all of us, all around this planet tonight, on our little widget there. It can free us from the past and inject us into a future that's unimaginably rich. Stay tuned. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and we shall return.
This is 1050 AM KCAA Loma Linda and 106.5 FM Yucaipa.
With my guest this morning, Dave Distler. Okay, Dave, let's dive into the deep end of the pool. Between phase one and phase two, how did you figure out you could do something different to make the thrust bigger, the ballooning noise not really significant? You could separate real thrust from fake thrust. In other words, make it more efficient, make it closer to a type 2, to where people would go, oh my God, Dave, you've got a real EM drive there.
Well, you'll like this because one of the things that I changed this time was, rather than having to deal with this thermal lift issue on a balance beam, is I converted it over to a Cavendish system. And a Cavendish is also termed a torsion beam or a torsion pendulum.
Yes, the good old Cavendish experiment, where you basically have it's like a teeter-totter, but it's flat, right?
Mm-hmm.
And instead of going up and down, it goes left and right. It rotates around a pivot axis.
It rotates around a pivot axis, which in reality, all it is just some high quality wire, thin wire. I think I'm using about 28 mil diameter piano wire, which is working out great. I've already tested it. In fact, if we go to Radio with Pictures, okay. One of those, down at number six, I'm actually showing the chart. It's a video chart of the torsion pendulum in action. So if you click on NSF 1701 M drive static torsion beam test, click on that.
Okay.
First of all, I'll load it up, and I've sped this up, so this is like six times normal speed.
Well, it's only a two-hour show. Actually,
yeah, that's right.
Now
that's
an
right.
Hour. Okay, I can
now
see the graph.
Where it drops down right there, and then the sensor goes out of range because of the beam movement. That beam movement was me walking by it, just the movement of the air.
Oh, and wow.
It goes out of range.
That's sensitive, wow.
It's that sensitive.
Now, are you going to surround this with, like, plastic so you don't get air currents and stuff like that?
Well, where I've got this at is there are no vents. There's no air coming in this area whatsoever. I mean, it is dead space, not a single vent in it. So the whole room is...
Well, I can see on the chart here it's flat, which means you aren't getting any perturbations.
There isn't. There isn't. The worst thing that could happen is, and it's on a concrete slab, so the worst thing that could happen is a window's open or an air conditioner kicks on or a heater kicks on and it's going to knock air around. Mm-hmm. Once I left, as you can see that little spike there at the very beginning, then it knocked the sensor out of range. But you can see the beam is going back to its center.
Mm.
It's very, very slowly. It's in an oil bath and that dampens it slightly.
Okay, so that dampens the motion.
Dampens the motion, so there's not a lot of noise in this thing, and the I've got to calibrate this. Like every square is going to be X amount of milligrams. I'm going to be doing that tomorrow, but I did want to take a video and just actually show you and your listeners how stable this is. And of course, since it's rotational on the horizontal axis, guess what? You don't have to deal with vertical lift.
The lift factor.
It's gone.
Wow.
Now,
how much, compared to the off-scale spike at the beginning with you just walking and creating air currents, when you turn this thing on, what would you expect as a signal?
Well, the M drive was not mounted on it right now.
I know. I'm saying, we're just watching the physical system. But when you mount the M drive on it and you turn it on and the thrust is going not up or down but sideways, So this thing begins to rotate. What will we see on the graph?
Just like what you saw at the very beginning of it. In other words, the midpoint on this calibration run was 1.2 some volts. So actually when I turned the switch on to power the M drive, without me moving, without anything going on, I expect to see that to move up or move down, depending on which direction I have the thing facing.
Left or right.
Left or right by several, tenths of a volt. In other words, I do expect
it. Okay, hold it there. We're at 5 after the hour. We've got to cut for commercials, my God, to keep the conversation flowing. You're on the other side of midnight. My name is Richard C. Hoagland. My guest this morning, Dave Dissler. It sounds so simple, but we're talking about a technology which literally could take us to the stars, and it could do it well within our lifetime. In fact, I'm saying 5 years could see this whole thing go incredibly stellar. We'll come back and discuss more. You're on the other side of midnight, and we shall return.
What have I learned so far? I've learned that there is no one path that's right for everyone. I've learned that without my high school diploma, I can only do so much. My options were limited. I found a free personalized learning program with Learn for Life that is a flexible schedule so I could keep my job while earning my high school diploma. I found new career training opportunities that would jumpstart my future. What have I learned so far? I've learned that I can change my life.
Are you 14 to 19 years old and looking for a free high school diploma program with flexible meeting times? This program allows you to keep your job or important family responsibilities while earning your high school diploma. If you've fallen behind on credits or dropped out of school completely, get back on track with free tutoring, a caring faculty, and one-on-one attention. For more information on how to reach your graduation goal, visit learnforlife.org. That's L-E-A-R-N, the number 4, L-I-F-E, .org. Or enroll today by calling 877-360-LEARN. That's 877-360-LEARN.
Plexus Slim, the pink drink. It works. Consider the following. 95% of all diets and weight loss programs fail. 8 out of 10 Americans over the age of 25 are overweight. And 174 million Americans are overweight. Finally, there is a healthy solution to help you lose weight. The synergistic effect of Plexus Slim and Plexus 96 taken together can help you lose more weight faster than you ever thought possible. Experience quick results and keep the weight off. People around the country are experiencing amazing results, and you can too. Plus, right now, you can try it free for 7 days. Just email your name, address, and phone number for a free sample to tryplexusfree@gmail.com. tryplexusfree@gmail.com. Plexus Slim, the pink drink. It works.
Do you freak out every time you break out? Well, I've got one word for you. Proactive. There's a huge reason Proactive is the number one acne treatment in the country. It totally works. Prescription-grade Proactive heals your acne and even prevents future breakouts. How great is that? There's a reason why so many celebrities use Proactive. Their faces are their money. And I'm telling you, it's time to get it because Proactive has set up a special dedicated 800 number. So get ready to punch that number into your phone. Pull over if you have to. Here's the deal. $19.95 gets you Proactive, plus a rotating deep cleansing brush. It's valued at $45, and it's yours free. So is the shipping. For only $19.95, you, my friends, are guaranteed to get clear and stay clear, or you'll get your money back. Here's the number. 1-800-543-3313. Got it? Good. Call for a lifetime of beautiful skin. 1-800-543-3313. 1-800-543-3313.
And we are back with my guest this morning, Dave Dissler. Okay, you wanted to bring our attention to something very important that happened, I think, today, in the a couple days ago, in terms of NASA making a decision and a U.S. congressman actually envisioning a major goal for NASA by the 100th anniversary of the moon landing. And given that it's not going to happen with conventional technology, and this technology is almost ready for prime time. What's the connection? What's the crossover?
This is quite astonishing to me that I saw it. If your listeners would jump down past, let's see, we were just looking at number four. We can jump down past five for the time being. Go down past six and seven. That's some techie stuff that people can take a look at if they want to. But I'm going to have people go down to number eight. A posting today that links to a new requirement for NASA to start interstellar research.
Okay.
And I posted this on NASA Spaceflight today, and it has some links. And for people who don't have a computer handy or it's not convenient for them, I'm going to go ahead and read a section out of this. And what this is part of a budget. The House committee was talking to them about NASA's budget. And they actually put together a report, Appropriations Committee report. And there was a section in there which I'd never seen before, never read about, never even heard about. And it goes down, lists several different other items that they can find on the link number eight. But let me just read the one that caught my eye. Interstellar Propulsion Research. That's the title of this paragraph. And I'll read this. Current NASA propulsion investments include advancements in chemical, solar, electric, and nuclear thermal propulsion. However, even in their ultimate theoretically achievable implementations, none of these could approach cruise velocities of one-tenth the speed of light, nor any other fission-based approach, including nuclear, electric, or pulsed fission. The committee, now this is the House committee, these are the politicians. The committee encourages NASA to study and develop propulsion concepts that could enable an interstellar scientific probe with the capability of achieving a cruise velocity of one-tenth of the speed of light.
Good heavens!
These efforts shall be centered on enabling such a mission to Alpha Centauri, which can be launched by the 100th anniversary, 2069, of the Apollo 11 moon landing.
Now, are they talking a robot like Voyager, or are they talking a crewed mission?
They didn't say, and I think they purposely left that open.
My gosh.
Yeah, and it goes on to say, in this very lengthy paragraph, actually, propulsion concepts may include, but are not limited to, fusion-based implementations, including antimatter catalyzed fusion and the Bussard interstellar ramjet.
Yeah, we should stop and tell people what a Bussard ramjet is. It's kind of a cool thing.
Yeah, go ahead. I know a little bit about it. It's basically a big hydrogen scoop, right?
But with magnetic fields. In other words, you have to put it out to like half a light year. You got to use supermagnetic fields. You shape it. You put out filaments and threads of some super electric material like a carbon, nanotubes or something. And you basically create a huge force field to funnel as you move through the interstellar medium at, tenth the speed of light. You funnel the interstellar hydrogen gas into your starship ramjet, and you ignite it with fusion, and you create thrust out the back end. And it's basically like an airplane, except instead of engulfing oxygen from the atmosphere, it's engulfing hydrogen from interstellar space and compressing it so it fuses, and it creates energy. Mm-hmm. It's so primitive compared to what you're working on.
Yeah, it does seem like you'd have to have an awfully big scoop or funnel.
God, and think of how many things can go wrong.
Oh, yeah.
They're having conniptions getting the Webb telescope to correctly unfold, right?
Yes.
And it's only a few meters in diameter. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine having to have an electric net that would unfold, encompassing miles or hundreds of miles or thousands of miles, all interconnected, so it would... basically carry current.
Mm-hmm. I think their statement in here is, but are not limited to certain type of, these are things that have been presented, in the past.
Oh my God, going back decades. I mean, these are all standard technology. It's kind of like Bob Forward. Remember, I've talked on the show about Bob Forward from Hughes. This is the kind of Bob Forward stuff. Oh, there's a guy out there named Lubin who's connected to the British industrialist whose name escapes me, who's connected to Stephen Hawking, whose name does not escape me. They announced a few weeks ago they were going to do this interstellar project to get little tiny microsatellites the size of computer chips up to a tenth the speed of light with some kind of photonic propulsion.
Right.
Again, it's kind of like really, 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 really stretching the state of the art when there's the EM drive stuff over there on the left-hand side of the lab, and it's doing stuff it should not. And if you put that together, we can get to Alpha Centauri before the end of this decade.
Well, if they're saying 2069 to launch a thing, now they didn't say whether it was manned missions or just a probe, I think there's going to be other people out there jumping on this a lot quicker than that.
Oh, yeah.
They go on to say the other type of technologies that they, you know, for a House committee to even bring these type of things to the forefront is surprising to me. But they say matter, antimatter annihilation reactions, which is, you know, basically what the Star Trek theory is, multiple forms of beamed energy approaches, and immense sails that intercept solar photons or the solar wind. At the present time, none of these are beyond technology readiness level TRL 1 or 2. The NASA Innovative Advanced Concepts, you know, the NASA acronym NIAC, program is currently funding concept studies of directed energy propulsion for wafer-sized spacecraft. This is what you're talking about.
That was what I just was remembering, Lubin's ideas. Yeah,
Lubin. That in principle could achieve velocities exceeding 0.1c, or a tenth of the speed of light, and an electric sail that intercepts solar wind protons. Over the past few years, NIAC has also funded mission-level concept studies of two fusion-based propulsion concepts. So, now here's the bottom line to that very long paragraph. It's the last, what is it? Is a full sentence? Yeah, it's a real long.
This is so fascinating politically. Read it, please.
Yeah. Therefore, within 1 year of enactment of this act, NASA shall submit an interstellar propulsion technology assessment report with a draft conceptual roadmap, which may include an overview of potential advanced propulsion concepts for such an interstellar mission, including technical challenges, technology, readiness level assessments, risks, and potential near-term milestones and funding requirements.
Good heavens.
Boom. You know,
This is the holy grail, because there's no in the first parts of the paragraph, they tell you all the reasons all the envisioned technologies won't work. And then they lay out the objective, kind of like Kennedy, within 1 year of enactment of this act. Is this part of this year's budget proposal to the Obama administration for fiscal year 2017?
Yeah, let me go pull that up. I'll go right to the link, and I'll pull up. It's a PDF. And let's see.
Yeah, there it is, FY 2017.
Yeah, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Holy cow. They want the administration to start thinking interstellar. Because remember, administration, NASA is the executive branch that serves at the pleasure of the president. So whoever's running NASA is a creation of the White House. It's not a normal line agency. It's kind of special. We all know that. They're singling out in this budget appropriation that NASA will, within a year of the enactment of this act, the signing of this legislation, when Obama does it in a few months, within a year, NASA has to submit an interstellar propulsion technology plan.
That's right.
Good grief.
Challenges, technology readiness level assessment, risks.
Well, this sounds to me like they know what's going on over at Eagle Works. They're getting ready. They're getting the basket ready.
Well, you know, things mysteriously happen, but they all happen for a reason.
Well, tell us. I'm with the background scuttlebutt now. What's really going on in NASA around Eagle and the EM drive?
Well, there are things that I have been made aware of that are not for, unfortunately, not for general publication and notification, because, as you know, NASA, hey, let's put it this way. You've worked for large corporations before, correct? And you know what it's like when a corporation or an entity has a director of communications and an entire staff that is designed to be nothing but communications. Mm-hmm. And then you go off on your own and you release something to the public that doesn't go through all of the gatekeepers and the checks and balances. Well, that's what happened with EagleWorks. And
this is like, what, about a year or 2 years ago?
Yeah, exactly right. And they started posting, and I believe a lot of it was originally on NASASpaceflight.com and maybe some other places, but the one I was familiar with.
Well, they seem to go into a tailspin every time Reddit would pick up and do a story.
Right. It was the same thing with the other forum, too, is that the people at head, from what I understand, and I'm not an employee there, don't know the politics of it. That's the last thing I'm interested in. But when they started reading these things that were not part of the normal,
party line, say it.
Party line. Yeah, exactly. I'm trying to be politically correct here, but if they didn't say it, if it didn't come from their staff or their office to the particular sources that they wanted to alert to, if it went to the general public first, then that kind of cuts the rug out from all of the sources that NASA may use, you know, the CNNs of the world and mm-hmm. and whoever else. That kind of messes that, gums up the works. So, long story, obviously, and I'll cut it short here a little bit, but they have been on a total, blackout and lockdown since, that particular time when through forums, maybe NASA Space Flight and maybe others, there was some public information released. But what I can tell you, is that, The program is still on. It is still proceeding. It is what I would say at a higher level than what a lot of people may believe. They have got a panel, a blue ribbon panel, which has, if not already completed their review, about to do a review. It's an in-house panel. I even know some of the people's names that were on that. They did mention those people, elsewhere, and a peer reviewed paper. So, the stars are aligning, no puns intended. Mm. Well, maybe puns intended to,
well, it just look, read that paragraph again to yourself, folks, but the very bottom within a year, they want a plan out of NASA. NASA, it just says in the first parts of that paragraph, nothing we know about space propulsion will help us do this stuff, but we want a plan in a year anyway, meaning they've got to know there's stuff that's not on the table that actually can make it possible.
Mm-hmm. What's surprising me, Richard, about this whole thing is, you know, public servants and you know House committees, and of course I know it's their job, the government is an oversight, overseeing NASA and so forth. But for them to have this level of detail and this specific message was a big surprise to me. I've seen, people say, well, you shouldn't get government people involved in science, but there's something that's very specific here. Just like you said, they were saying that current propulsion investments include advanced, and this is what they're talking about now, include advancements in chemical, solar electric, and nuclear thermal propulsion. However, even in their ultimate theoretically achievable implementations, none of these could approach cruise velocities of 1/10 the speed of light. In other words, what you got ain't going to hack.
Exactly. So why offer a goal if you're saying technologically we can't do it? Unless you know there's a technological end run.
Yeah, that would be, well, see, this is the government telling them that now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, but does the government or the lawmakers know something that NASA doesn't know, or who knows what the intrigue is? Because this M drive thing has really been a lot of intrigue.
Well, how many people in the Congress do you think are following this show? How many people are following when you guys talk about stuff? And obviously, they can log on and read, NASASpaceflight.com. This is not like it's been a big kept secret. It's been a secret from the mainstream, but at the edges, the revolution is alive and well, and there's results, And if you're any kind of a visionary, maybe you want NASA to be in a position to take advantage if you really love NASA the way some of these guys do.
Well, they're certainly giving them the opportunity, and I think it is up to NASA to lead the way. However, with the advancements in the free enterprise going on here with Elon and Bezos and the Russian entrepreneur and everything, NASA is on the verge of not being the only game in town. But I think the government is basically saying, well, guys, if you want to, the way I read this, guys, you really want to get up to speed, get off of your chemical, solar, electric, nuclear, thermal propulsion and get to something different. And they said it may include this, blah, 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 but it is not limited to. So get off the duff and do something, I think, is the message from this committee. At least in this one particular statement, interstellar propulsion research. Just go do it. And they got a milestone report and everything else. Now, when they talk about lighting these very small sails with Hawking, that to me is.
You probably have to describe that a bit better. This high velocity propulsion concept is you basically have a super laser, right, like what was proposed during Reagan's Star Wars defense initiative and all that, and you have it aimed towards space, probably mounted on a high island mountain in maybe Hawaii near the equator, and you use the photonic pressure, the light pressure of this incredibly powerful laser, to shine against little tiny, almost computer chip-sized spacecraft. Mm-hmm. And this propulsion is supposed to work in terms of pressure, radiation pressure, to blast these little things up to about, the tenth the speed of light over a period of a few hours. And then they're supposed to keep going and going and going. I haven't seen any proposals for, A, how they're powered, B, what kind of cameras you can put on them, and C, how the hell do you get the signal home? How do you get the data home? Because what kind of power can you emit from a chip the size of a pencil eraser or smaller?
Yeah, and that's exactly right. There's a lot of gaps in that. The theory of it, I can understand. Basically, you build a ground-based Death Star, and you fire this thing up, which... You talk about the amount of gigawatts they were talking. You talk about gigawatts, Back to the Future, type of thing.
It's so primitive. It's so clunky. It's so 19th century steampunk, but it's basically tapping in, Dave, to a wish to get out of the solar system, to see what's out there, to see real deep space. But the minds that are working on this are so limited because they don't know, or they're not willing to admit publicly, that there are radically more interesting and more efficient ways to do this, including the technology you're working on.
And I think that that's what surprised me about Stephen Hawking. I think that for him to get behind this, especially with some of his ideas on, event horizons and some of the unruh radiation, the Casimir effect, the quantum stuff that he's been doing is far more conceptually viable to be able to put that into a propulsion technology with his mind to fall back to something like I'm going to shine a bright
bright
laser,
flashlight, yeah.
Bright flashlight up and these little micro...
I mean, really, how would you possibly communicate and get the data back?
Because
what could the power throughput of a chip be in the middle of interstellar space passing a star system at a tenth the speed of light and taking pictures? What kind of a telephoto lens could you make at that tiny scale that would give you an image that would be big enough to see the details as you flash by at a tenth the speed of light?
And then not really know where they're going. I mean, this is like blowing in the wind, picking a dandelion.
Sagan's classic image in Cosmos. We'll hold it there. We're at the bottom of the hour, one half hour to go. If you want to call in and talk to Dave about going to the stars, by all means, be my guest. Otherwise, when we come back, I'm going to take everybody to Mars. You're on the other side of midnight, that magic time between dusk and dawn where almost anything is possible. And for God's sake, look at the news these days. It is. My name is Richard C. Hoagland, and
We shall return.
Like to spend a few days in another world? Then write this down. Golden Bear Cottages, Big Bear Lake. Now, listen, this is not some corporate-owned operation. It's family-owned and operated by some real nice people. Unique? Oh, you bet. Golden Bear Cottages features 28 one-of-a-kind cabins on a 5-acre historic site. Great for families, couples, and groups. And cabins are available with 1 to 7 bedrooms. Golden Bear Cottages is just a stone's throw from Big Bear Lake and super close to 3 great ski areas. Now, I could go on all day about Golden Bear Cottages in Big Bear, but to see everything, just go to goldenbear.net. Again, goldenbear.net. Golden Bear Cottages in Big Bear. Clean, comfortable, and affordable. Check them out. goldenbear.net.
Do you even like your company website? Most of those that I've spoken to don't, especially if they bought it from some Yellow Page rep or one of those big do-it-yourself web companies. I'm Greg Hill of Flip Your Dot Website. How about a complete redesign at only $200? You heard correctly. Starting at only $200, you can have a great-looking website with all the latest features. Your team will have complete control of your new website with the best content management system available. If needed, we will rewrite your content to make it search engine friendly. We offer inexpensive solutions for e-commerce, blogs, online chat like we have, even a CRM and more. We are SEO experts. We can drive traffic to your website and get you customers through the search engines and social media. So come online and chat with us anytime. Even our domain name is cutting edge, www.flipyour.website, not .com, flipyour.website. Again, flipyour.website.
Attention business owners. Do you know your online business score? Google and other major search engines now score your business based on several key areas. That's your directory listings, any ratings, and positive and negative reviews. Find out your online business score at whatsmybusinessscore.com. Statistics show that 70% of customers trust a business with a minimum of 6 to 10 reviews. whatsmybusinessscore.com will show you what your potential customers will see online about your business so you can do something about it. Your online business score can affect where search engines place your company in local search results. Having accurate directory listings and staying on top of your company's reputation is super important now. Go to whatsmybusinessscore.com and take the first step in gaining control of your business's online presence. whatsmybusinessscore.com will scan all the top directories and review sites and show you your score, as well as any reviews or directory listings that may be inaccurate, all at no cost. Go to whatsmybusinessscore.com. That's whatsmybusinessscore.com today.
And we are back. You know, I cannot say enough about Nick Skouros and his musical colleagues and their contributions to the show. That is Nick's music. And that is, you know, like 10 years old or whatever. And whoever knew that it would fit perfectly into this etheric concept of the bumper music, you know, for mood and timing and all that stuff. Anyway, Bob, you're on the air.
Yeah, quick question for Dave, actually, a couple of them. Excuse me. I'm looking at the Scheuer Drive, either picture 1 or 2. Is there any reason that couldn't be 3D printed and get rid of all the nuts and bolts?
Oh, what a cute question.
And also, is going from the current system you have with Newton meters of force, is it a matter of increasing the size of the cavity, or is it a matter of just pumping more power into it?
Okay, good questions, Bob. The 3D printing, if you can get into a metal, a lot of the 3D printing, like they're putting on the ISS now, experimenting with, is all based upon plastic. However, I did see something locally to me out here at Glenn Research Center where they were trying some experiments with rocket nozzles. So,
But what's his name? Musk has been 3D printing his rocket nozzles for the Falcon for, I think, a year or 2 years now, right, Bob?
Yep, take them off the printer, put them on the rocket, and fire the puppy off.
Well, see, what's nice about that, Bob, it's good. It's a good idea because you don't have seams. You know, right now you've got to wrap the metal around and you have to have a seam on the side of the cone. You have to have a bottom with the bolts on it. You have to have a top. If you could 3D print that, which would be ideal, but, you know, that type of technology is out of the realm of, unfortunately, my humble
budget.
Well,
for a proof of concept test, you don't need it. But I think Bob is thinking, you know, multitasking, industrial use, going to Saturn, that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. You could print these and you could, you know, literally print these on a space journey. And,
while Bob is with us, one of the advantages of 3D printing, if you need a lot of these things, if you can gang them up like a mosaic of engines, because if any one engine has a really kind of a, you know, three snowflakes of thrust, but what if you have 100 engines? That kind
of
thing.
That's right, and that leads into Bob's second question is how do you gain more power? The way I did it was I just used better materials, thicker copper, polished copper, using the same magnetron. So I'm using the same energy, but I'm making a higher Q device, which
basically define Q.
Yeah,
we're not talking James Bond here, I don't think.
That's right. Which basically means it's a. A higher efficiency.
It's a measure of reflective bounces, isn't it? In other words, the number of bounces, reflections internally in that cone that the microwaves will undergo efficiently before they lose energy. So
that's
the
right.
Higher the Q, the higher the efficiency, and hopefully, according to Shire, higher the thrust, right?
That's correct. And if you are using microwave frequencies, and this is when you're talking about different applications, microwave frequencies will bounce less than some of the lower frequencies. Just think about the skip that you have with in the ionosphere with a lower RF frequency. So if you physically scale this thing up to use lower frequencies, let's say this thing is 10-inch diameter on the large end and 6-inch diameter on the small end, well, that's tuned for microwave frequencies. Let's go down into the VHF or UHF range. Then you're talking about an engine that would maybe be 5 feet in diameter.
But the bigger you make it, the more mass and the heavier it is, and the thrust is going to go down in terms of efficiency because there won't be enough thrust to move the damn thing. It'll be too heavy.
However, you can pump more power into it because
it's bigger. That scales
it's bigger.
That way. Okay.
Yeah, it scales. So theoretically, it's a lot less expensive. And the material doesn't have to be quite as precise as microwave frequencies.
Is anybody proposing a DIY experiment using like VHF as opposed to microwaves and building everything bigger to scale?
No, there's a guy that's in Germany, Paul Kosi. I can't remember his last name, but he's in Aachen, Germany. And what he's done is he's 3D printed a little frame for a CubeSat, and he's got a design for an M drive that's 10 times the frequency of this one, which makes the thing very, very small. So he's raising some funds right now to launch this in a CubeSat in 2017.
Wow.
His power is very low, though. It's small mass, but the higher frequency you get, the more difficulty you have generating, you know, enough RF power or microwave power. Kosia, yes, that's Paul.
I'm a hardware engineer in Aachen, Germany. I built a tiny .. Obviously,
that's
he's
it.
Talking about his technology. Okay,
that is his technology, and I wish he would join us because he is really pushing this in the opposite direction that we were kind of talking with Bob, you know, and you down at the VHF frequencies, which would be a large, massive device.
Now, theoretically, again, when you're applying theory to something which no theory applies to, it's kind of hard. But there is some. I did see some contributions on the NASA spaceflight.com site, indicating that it was the difference in the size of the large end of the cone and the small end which resulted in a conversion of the momentum of the photons into momentum of the device, even in a sealed, you know, container.
Right.
If you make this bigger or smaller, does that conversion, is the efficiency go up or go down? In other words, again, is the geometry and the scale a key part of getting more bang for your buck?
I think it is. The reason I say that is as long as it resonates at whatever frequency.
Okay, resonance is critical. Okay.
The resonance frequency of that can or that cavity or that cone, whatever you want to call it, frustum, I guess, is the geometric term if you want to be exact on it. But that has to resonate with whatever RF power you're putting into it. The effect should be the same whether it's at 25 gigahertz, which is what Paul's is in he's an engineer in Aachen, Germany. Maybe he can call us or get online here or Skype wise, but that makes it very, very small.
So if you have a microwave oven, a Kleistron, putting out what, maybe 1500 watts at 2.5 gigahertz, billion cycles per second, isn't it easier if you can build an equivalent power device, but much tinier, like the microthruster that this guy Paul is talking about? If you can pump energy into that, but how can you pump energy into a small device through a solid state system that will approach what a magnetron can do, which is not a solid state system? It's basically coils and electricity and a resonance cavity, and it's not micro scale. It's big, so it's heavy. How much power could you generate with solid-state devices that would match the magnetron 1,500 watts output?
It wouldn't. The only way to get up at 25 gig and that type of power, and I'm not an expert on it, is I believe there are Kleistrons, which are big, massive devices. I mean, it would dwarf Paul's M-Drive design by quite a bit. And he's using a solid-state, and I believe it's a radar application, but it's down at the few watt level, if I'm not mistaken. But it's also dealing with a much smaller mass.
Well, this website says Hackaday, and there's another one.
That's it.
We should post these over on Radio with Pictures. It says the EM drive is already built and running. The path is to finish the satellite, which will carry it before the end of this year, and possibly get a launch slot on UN UNISAT 7, which is set for 2017. You can be part of history by making this mission possible. This is from his GoFundMe website.
Right. That is correct.
And, well, if he says he's already built and running, where are his test results, Dave?
His test results are... He has been posting it on Hackaday. In fact, I think Miss M there put a good link for it. Hackaday.io project, basically flying an M drive. If you go in there and go to Hackaday.io, search for M drive, you'll find it. His results have been graphs and charts. He hasn't had independent verification that I know of. I mean, he could have, but I'm not aware of it. And a lot of the graphs and charts are unlabeled, so a lot of people are giving him... He did have some results on the screen on Hackaday, but not to the point where some of his critics were happy. They wanted to see... Well, how much deflection or how much force? So it's still the same old thing. They're just going after what Paul's doing, like they went after me, what they're going after seashells, and they're going after the people down at Eagle Works. It's just it's just basically the way it works with people going after people associated with the M drive. But
let's switch the conversation a bit here and talk about the Nasica superconducting thruster, which I introduced on this show with Paul LeViolet a few weeks ago, and we raised I think $8,000-$9,000 for them so far. By the way, again, if you want to donate to Dave Disler's EM drive project, you know, named after the Enterprise, NSF-1701. The link is right there. He's got a PayPal link. You can send him a few bucks. And obviously, as he gets now down to the wire in terms of testing, which will be, you basically said it's ready to turn on?
Yes, it's ready to turn on. I'll be doing that this Saturday.
Wow. And you're taking video?
I'll be taking video. In fact,
multiple angles, multiple cameras, please.
Yep, I'll have a couple of static cameras, and here's what I'm going to do, just because I like to do things. I'm a nonconformist, and I
really
I like to do things a little differently.
We only have conformists on this show. Gosh, how did you?
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to I'm going to try a live broadcast.
Really,
so I've got a YouTube channel all set up, and I'm gonna test that. What is tomorrow, or what is today? Thursday.
Today is Thursday.
Testing that. Yeah, I'll be testing it Friday to see if it's up and running. But I'm gonna be probably doing it live, but I'll also be videotaping.
So, how will people get hold of the live stream?
It is going to be on. What I'll do is I'll put it on NASASpaceflight.com. I'll put the link to it.
Put it on your page also, here. So people just go to the archive and look for Dave's appearance this week, this morning, and we'll put that link so you can click on that and go to his live test this weekend.
Right.
I presume you'll have a little, you know, thing up there that says, you know, test in 5 hours, 4 minutes, and 37, so that kind of thing, a countdown clock or something.
Yeah, if I figure out how to do a countdown clock, I haven't tried that one yet. But
compared to the minuscule thrust of the first one, which just demonstrated to you there's something here, what is the Mark II thruster going to do? What are we going to see?
Well, I designed it and tested the cavity without the magnetron, and I did see some very good performance as far as its Q or its quality of reflections. I guess is probably the easiest way to say it.
Now, this is at normal temperature. It's just good quality copper. It's not superconducting or anything exotic like that.
That's correct. I set a goal for myself of 100 times the force. In other words, I wanted to go from 177 micronewtons up into the, you know, 17.5-18 millinewton range.
Wow.
Which I felt was reasonable over a theoretical photon rocket, and also up into the area where there has been some claims by Scheuer and others. They got over the millinewton range and were up into the tens of millinewtons. So that's where I chose it. You know, I don't know that I had a scientific formula to do it. I looked at what was out there. I looked at ways I could improve it. And I just set that high goal. So the first test I'll be doing, the live broadcast I'll be doing on Saturday, is going to be just to check for Lorentz forces. Lorentz forces, this will not be actually showing deflection of movement. This will actually be pointed straight down on a rotary to see if there's any forces created, any movement created by magnetic fields in the power supply line. So, in other words, this is a qualification run. I got to get all the errors taken care of first before I actually do a thrust analysis, if that makes sense. What I'm wanting to do is eliminate things like the Lorentz. And there was a nice paper put out by Mr. Lee that explained how that could have messed up some of NASA's earlier test. And so one of the reasons I'm doing this is based upon Mr. Lee's paper. And I also want to show that, that this is not due to a Lorentz force, which is a normal magnetic force.
Well, you have to exclude the possible before you can get into the impossible, right?
That's correct. Yeah, you have to eliminate those type of things. So,
I think we might have Paul. I'm just about to try to connect with our inventor in Germany.
Oh yes,
Paul.
Can you hear you?
Are you with us?
Oh yes. Hello.
Hello, Paul. Dave. Paul.
Paul. Hello. Guten Morgen, meine Freunde.
Ah, danke.
Yeah. Very nice to meet you.
Paul, we've got about 10 minutes to the little under 10 minutes to the end of the show. Can you describe your thruster and when, what kind of testing results you've been getting?
So this thruster is basically the M drive, like you know it from the internet presentation, and mine is running with 24 gigahertz.
24 gigahertz, that's what, 10 yes. times microwave oven?
Yes, 10 times, so it makes also the form factor much smaller. So then it's possible to put it into orbit in a very small satellite, the size of like 5 centimeters cube.
How much power are you getting out?
Oh, so first the power getting in is 0.5 watts, and the power getting out, it's hard to estimate. I would say it's about 1 micronewton with this kind of setup.
Okay, micronewton being 1/1,000,000th of a newton, and we already established that a micronewton is a tiny, tiny, like snowflake, size thrust, right?
Yes.
Now, how do you know that you're getting real thrust and not some kind of noise, not some kind of ballooning has been discussed?
Yes, it might be also noise, but I was trying to eliminate these parasitic factors, so I put a box around the setup and... I was trying to avoid like current loops, which might induce magnetic fields interacting with the Earth magnetic field or other wires.
Right.
It might have some thermal effects, so I was taking into account that, for example, when the cavity heats up, the airflow might push it also. So I recorded tons of data. Much of it was not so good looking, but there are still some implications which show that there might be a tiny force which looks out above the noise.
So how big will your CubeSat be? When do you think it can be launched? How much money do you need? And how will you know when it's in orbit that you're getting thrust results as opposed to just atmospheric drag effects?
Yes. So this is a pocket cube form factor satellite. So it's like a cube with 5 centimeters edge length. And 3 years ago, I launched already a pocket cube. The launch costs are about 20,000 euro for one. And there are still tests to make for the fit check, like vacuum outgassing tests, shaker, etc. So.
Right.
I think at max it will be 25,000 euro. And
what is that? At the exchange rate roughly in today, what's that in US dollars?
US dollars, a little bit more. I don't know the exact course. I think it's something below 30,000.
Okay.
$28,000 or so, I think.
So that money is spent for what? Integration of the satellite with the rocket or to build the satellite itself?
The satellite I've been building with my own money. It's just the launch cost and the fit check.
Ah, okay. And you think you could, if you got the money in the next, 6 months, you could be ready for a 2017 launch?
I think so, yes. There is still some other stuff to do, like, for example, the frequency coordination with the Amateur Radio Society.
Right.
Because commercial frequencies are very expensive, I think $60,000 or so. So when you put an amateur radio payload inside with some interesting stuff like camera, slow scan television.
Right. Now, how would you control the thrusting, and how would you detect the difference between thrust and, as I said a moment ago, random forces like atmospheric drag in the upper atmosphere?
So controlling will be first made by passive magnetic stabilization and light sensors.
Passive magnetic stabilization. You mean you basically put a current through the spacecraft, it's got some kind of whip antennas, and it assumes an orientation relative to the Earth because of the small magnetic forces of putting a current through the wires?
Even simpler, there would be a permanent magnet aligning like
permanent magnet, okay.
Yes. And light sensors, which also check if the alignment is in the orbital flight path. And when the M-drive is aligned to the flight path, it would be switched on.
Ah, okay. And then you just basically track it on radio and radar and see if the orbit changed.
Yes, so every SAT is tracked by NORAD with an accuracy of about 1 or 2 kilometers. And I estimated with 1 micronewton, it would be in 30 days permanent powering. It would result in several kilometers, over 10 kilometers.
So, okay, let me do that again. If you turn the engine on and run it for 30 days, 1 month, right?
Yes.
You're saying that you believe you could detect a change in the orbit because of the anomalous thrust of the M drive inside on the spacecraft by several kilometers or several miles deviation from the orbit without the thrust on.
Yes, yes.
Wow. Well, that sounds like something we should get behind. Dave, what do you think? Any questions? Any follow-up?
Oh, no, I'm just glad to be able to speak with a fellow builder who has gone through, even though the design is different, with different frequencies, the fundamental design and purpose and intent is to try to do this ourselves and not wait for someone else to validate whether this M drive works. So I think Paul, with his experience in satellite work prior, has a very distinct advantage. And also the disadvantage, quite frankly, I have with my design and what Scheuer would have with his and Seashells and everybody else is we're down at a lower frequency, which is a much heavier, larger piece of equipment to launch.
Mm.
And you know, if we're talking pounds, you know what the weight of 1 pound is, what, $10,000?
It's about 10 grand now to put 1 pound into orbit, yes.
Exactly.
Paul, excuse me, how do you pronounce your last name?
Kotsila.
Kotsila. Okay.
Kotsila.
So where are you in your funding campaign? Do you think you're going to get funded? Because this sounds like an extraordinarily important experiment.
Oh, I'm somehow very skeptical we get the funding, but anyway, we want to build it and complete it, because when you got a product ready, the people also maybe will see that this thing is real and not just a dream. So,
well, thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're reaching the end of the show. I've only got a couple of minutes here. Paul, thank you from Germany. We'll be following your progress. And actually, I'd like to have you come on when things get a little closer and you can tell us your progress from your point of view.
Okay, I will.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, Dave, any final thoughts? Because we didn't have a lot of time tonight to talk about what I wanted to talk about, which is if you go and look at those two pictures under Radio with Pictures, under my section, the two Mars pictures, there's a city on a hill. The Curiosity is driving closer and closer and closer. There are comparisons with the pyramids of Egypt, similar scales. There are comparisons with the footprint at the bottom of the World Trade Towers after their destruction, showing that the size and the geometry and the constructional details of that hole in Manhattan and that hole in Mars on the side of Mount Sharp basically are the same. That's why we have to develop this drive, and that's why we have to go privately, because we have been withheld from who we are and where we are and who we have become for far too long. Dave?
I'll tell you what, enjoyed this. Amazing that it goes by so fast. I guess we did this for 2 hours. It feels more like about 25 minutes because there's so much to talk about. I just appreciate the opportunity to kind of get in here and talk about it. I'm glad we finally got another builder. After what, four discussions here, another builder is found your program, and when we talk about M Drive has jumped in there. And I would say, Paul, yeah, get a hold of Paul and he can give you a lot of the details. And you know, even when some of the other people, Seashells and some of the other people are ready to talk about their drive, hey, let's do it, because if we don't do it, there's no sense in waiting on somebody else.
It's time. It's definitely time. Well, thank you, everyone. Thanks, my audience. Thank Dave Disler. I must say, this is the most extraordinary technology to be on the threshold of seeing the fruition of a dream. Well, tomorrow morning, we go in the opposite direction. We go back in time, way back in time to an ancient civilization that may have been a super civilization that gave the Egyptians the technology to do what our friend Chris Dunn is going to show you about tomorrow morning. So until then, same time, same bat channel. We'll be here tomorrow. Until then, remember, third star on the left, straight on till morning. Good night, everyone.